Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Hello, this is Debron Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the second week of November. This week, we are very happy to present for you part two of a show that we recorded last month on a field trip with ecologist Jeff Hammerson, speaking about water bird migration. Part one of our field trip was spent looking for birds along the rocky shore just south of Boathaven. For this week's show, we popped over to the nearby Kaitai Lagoon Nature Park to check for different species of waterfowl that might prefer this habitat type over the exposed shoreline. But before we get to our main topic, let's first hear the mystery sound of the week. A big hint for your mystery sound this week is that it is from a species that we saw in part one of our field trip last month. We'll play the sound again at the end of the program and tell you more about it.
Here we are with Jeff Hammerson again as our guide for waterbird migration. This is part two of our program, and we are now at Kaitai Lagoon Nature Park, which we're very thankful to have protected here right in the middle of Port Townsend. We focused on migrating shorebirds in part one, but we are going to talk more about our migrating waterfowl, the ducks, and if we're really lucky, we'll see some of the greater yellowlegs that we spoke about earlier. So, Jeff, welcome.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
Yeah, we love having you, and we love being outdoors on this beautiful day. So what are we seeing now? That they're a little bit far away. We're really thankful to have Jeff's scope set up to identify some of these ducks.
All right, well, I just did a quick survey. Most of the ducks are on the other side of the lagoon, but there's a couple really nice groups of hooded mergansers, maybe 40 or so, and then a couple dozen ready ducks, and some maybe well over 100 American widgeons. And
as distinguished from the Eurasian, right? We sometimes get some of the others
right, yeah,
mixed in. But
in fact, if we looked very carefully and we were closer, we might be able to pick out one today, but they're a little far right now. I saw a couple of northern pintails as well. So, and mallards. A mallard's nest here. Most of the other ducks that are here right now didn't nest here. They came from other places. Like the hooded mergansers came from some wooded wetland somewhere. Could be close by in Washington, or could maybe be up in British Columbia. It's a little duck that nests in tree holes. And so you see those little birds floating out there, and they're very beautiful. And to think that each of them came out of a tree hole, it's a fun thought to imagine all the places that they may have, their parents may have nested, and like I said, maybe across British Columbia, maybe even farther north than that.
Well, and we also get the common and the red-breasted mergansers, right? And they're sometimes in really large groups in the wintertime, but they're more on the saltwater and the open, right?
Yeah, right. All three species you can see out on the saltwater, but in this particular pond here at the lagoon, it's mostly hoodeds. Never really see any red-breasted mergansers here, or common merganser once in a while, but mostly it's hooded mergansers that are here. They're a little diving duck as well as the ruddy duck as well, so they're going down to the bottom and feeding on small invertebrates that they find.
And the ruddy ducks, if you get a close view, they have that outrageous blue bill, right? Do they retain that blue bill all year round?
You know, it changes seasonally, like a lot of colors in birds. The feathers, of course, get molted, but the softer parts change color as well due to hormonal changes in the birds with their reproductive system. So it fades out and it's not so bright this time of year.
Will the ruddy ducks, some of them nest here?
They do nest here in small numbers, but when you see these big group, those are birds that have come from some other place where they nested. It could be hundreds or maybe 1,000 miles away. It's hard to know, again, without having the marked birds, knowing where they came from. But this lagoon gets used by lots and lots of ducks, and some years more than others. Hard to explain that variation sometimes. There are a lot of American widgeons here, and they'll be here in some years in the hundreds throughout to the colder months. And it's fun sometimes to watch them. If you come out here and you see a swarm of them pecking at the water surface in just dense groups, look very carefully for a diving bird among them, like a bufflehead or sometimes a ruddy duck. It doesn't really matter, but what they do is feed off of material that gets brought up toward the surface as a result of the feeding activity of the diving birds. So a diver goes down, let's say like a ruddy duck goes down, does some foraging on the bottom among the algae and so forth on the bottom, and as it's feeding on invertebrates, it's stirring up plant material. Bits of it comes up to the surface, and these American widgeons will gather in these groups, sometimes dozens and dozens, in a dense group, and they'll feed on the material. And you can just watch them. If the let's say the ruddy duck changes location and it goes over to the west a little farther, then the widgeons follow it and keep with it and get access to food that they wouldn't reach otherwise, because they're not divers. They feed pretty much on what they can reach from the surface.
So Jeff, that's a really general distinction in the duck world, right, between divers and dabblers?
Yes, there are some nuances among those groups, but in general, if you want to have a simple classification based on their kind of feeding behavior, a diver would be a species that floats on the surface of the water and then goes down underneath and swims to the bottom usually, or sometimes in the water column, to get its food. Whereas a dabbling duck, like a mallard or American widgeon, tend to float on the surface, even feed on land sometimes, but they'll lean over, tip up, and reach down sometimes to get food underwater with their head submerged, but by and large they don't usually dive to get their food, although they can dive actually. Sometimes if you watch mallards, especially when they're preening and cleaning their plumage, sometimes they'll do some pretty amazing dives underwater. But as a general rule, they don't feed that way.
And their bill shape is usually different. It's kind of more like it's flat and more like for skimming the surface, and in contrast to a pointier diving bill.
Yeah, especially the mergansers have a pointy, slender bill, and it has a
serrated edge, too, right,
to
grab fish.
Slippery fish.
Uh-huh.
A ruddy duck, though, has a more typical duck bill, but nevertheless use it for grabbing things from the bottom. And that's what they're doing when those widgeons are following them around, is they're going down to get their own food, and meanwhile they're stirring up things that the dabbling widgeons can make use of.
Oh, that makes me smile. I didn't realize that before, so we'll look out for that in future. And so are the widgeons mostly vegetarian? Are they eating the vegetation that's floating up to the surface?
Yeah, they're pretty strictly vegetarians. You never say 100% in biology, but by and large, yes.
With anything.
Yeah,
you don't say 100% with anything.
They are vegetarians and make use of the plant material that grows. And not that they won't take bugs, especially during certain seasons when they're available to them. Oh, we're
seeing something
here.
Beautiful that's coming up.
A group of hooded mergansers coming in, and they're diving sequentially. They're kind of like a chorus line of them. Down, 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 down they go, and they're popping back up, just moving along.
They're just so beautiful. And when in the breeding season they flare that crest, you get this amazing arc of white with black surrounding it.
Yeah, sometimes mergansers will feed in cooperative groups where they'll all go down pretty much at the same time. And I just can't imagine what it's like when you have, let's say, 40 mergansers coming down and you're a fish down there, and all of a sudden you see this onslaught of hungry birds coming towards you with their serrated bills that will not let you slip away. It must be quite a terrifying sight.
Yeah, that's right. The mergansers, the hooded mergansers, are a smaller duck. These that are larger that we're seeing in the foreground, what are these?
A lot of those are American widgeons. Let me take a look at my binoculars. Yep. Oh, also some northern pintails. And they're another dabbling duck. And so they're just floating along, tipping over, putting their head underwater, reaching down and getting food from the bottom. They're in shallow water there. These pintails have some pretty amazing migrations. You know, we were talking about migration earlier. Some of these pintails will maybe winter locally. Some might head down to the Central Valley of California to winter down there. And some of those birds
and
have been tagged.
They've been bred inland, north in the
all
tundra?
All across, really. Oh, very wide area for breeding across interior North America or distracted. There's a
I think I saw a red-tail earlier, but I'm not sure. It's being harassed by a crow. It would like a little duck for for lunch.
The pintail, though, getting back to that, some of the ones that have been wintering in the Central Valley of California and that might pass through this area go to some pretty amazing places. They've been tagged. And so imagine this little pintail from the Central Valley. It's going up to its breeding area. Well, it might follow the coast and go up to Alaska, or it might get to Alaska by first flying east across the Rocky Mountains, then go north, and then go west again and end up in Alaska. And some of them actually continue up to eastern Russia.
Wow.
And some of the birds head out, not you might think they would just go pond hopping or lake, you know, wetland hopping from one feeding site to another, but some of them take off and cross the ocean the way some of the shorebirds and geese do. So just heading out over the Gulf of Alaska and end up in western Alaska, but by using a transoceanic route, it's pretty impressive.
Wow. So they don't make any stops. They just cross in one fell swoop.
Yeah, when they're over the ocean, there's really no place for them to feed, uh-huh. So they just keep going.
Wow. Pretty impressive indeed. So are some of the species, some of the ducks we will only be seeing in the open saltwater along the coast?
Right. So around here, for example, I mentioned the red-breasted merganser is a good example of that, where it's a fish-eating duck, and they're very tied during the non-breeding season to the coastal water, saltwater, where they feed on fish. And you don't see them on the lakes and ponds so much. Like we said earlier, once in a while a bird will show up almost anywhere out of character, but generally at the lagoon here we don't see them. Some can use either habitat, like when the common golden eyes get here.
Which will be when?
Later on. When things start freezing up in the interior of North America.
That drives them off the lakes and into the salt water that doesn't freeze, where there's open water.
And you can see them out on the coastal waters here. And also they use the lagoon here as well as a feeding and resting spot.
I want to ask you about migration. I heard last week there was an alert for Washington to watch birds migrating across the full moon. And I was so excited and I got my scope out and you're supposed to be able to hear and see them. And I was sorely disappointed, but you have seen them and heard them before, right?
Yeah, you got to pick the time of year. So it's during the peak of the migration season. September is a good time. Could be early October, and then so you get in the calendar framework, and then you have to get into the kind of the meteorological framework so that you've got favorable conditions for moving on that particular night. Most birds migrate at night, so you want to have clear skies and favorable winds. And so when all those things come together, then you can get some pretty impressive migration. I take my scope here and go out at the full moon or near full moon, aim it at the moon, and then stare at it. I mean, there's there's better ways of doing it these days. I started doing this long ago, and now you could use your digital camera so you wouldn't have to be staring at the moon. But if you do that on a good night, you can see the birds flying across the, you know, backlit by the moon, and see what direction they're going. Sometimes you can identify what group a bird belongs to, maybe not the exact species, but by its shape. Those birds that I've usually seen have been flying very high, and I didn't hear those, but some of the other migrants that are flying lower, you can hear their flight calls. But as far as watching the moon, it's fun because it convinces you that, man, you know, it's not just a story. There are birds way up there, sometimes a few thousand feet or more, flying at night. And you can actually witness this by watching the moon. Binoculars work, but a scope that you can put on a tripod and then keep adjusting it as the moon moves across the sky is probably a better way.
Well, it's now one of my, on my bucket list, as it were. I got to see the complete solar eclipse a few years ago, and now I'm wanting to see birds migrating
across the moon.
The total
eclipse caused by birds.
Yeah, that's right. That's what my aim is now.
The bird eclipse.
I know.
That would be good.
Yes, it would indeed. Oh, we're hearing a kingfisher that's going over, but the kingfishers are, we're thankful to have the kingfishers with us all year round.
Yeah, the greater yellow legs are, our way. Sound is, although they're often right where we're standing, right now they're over on the other side of the lagoon and just kind of resting on shore. Perhaps they've already done some foraging this morning already and are taking a break. Yeah, the kingfishers that come here probably nest over on the bluff where we were before. In part one, we were over along the near the bluff along the Larry Scott Trail. There's some burrows. They're burrow nesting birds, and they dig a horizontal burrow into the bank there near the top of the bluff. And then they feed out over the salt water, and they also come to the lagoon here, these ponds, and feed here as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're cool birds. And when we're talking about migration, we always think that the birds are coming from north to south, but they can come from, you know, from eastern Washington to us, or they can come like from higher elevations in the Olympics down to the lower elevations and spend the fall and winter here, right?
Yeah, depending on the species, there's a lot of the migration from higher elevation to lower elevation, for especially among the songbirds. But for example, harlequin ducks, if we're talking about waterfowl, water birds, they nest along the mountain streams here, right near us in the Olympics, and then they move down the rivers and spend the non-breeding season in salt water. And the males come down first, and then the females, which have more brood care responsibilities, come later. But so that's an example of one that goes up and down river systems between its breeding season and winter.
And a lot of the songbirds will do the same. I mean, people like varied thrush will disappear for a while, and then all of a sudden people are like, oh, the varied thrush are here, and it's because they haven't nested here. They've been nesting up in higher elevations,
yes.
Right?
Right, yeah. And we have some nomadic birds, too. This year especially, red crossbills have
been... I've been hearing a ton of crossbills,
yeah. Yeah, they've been in abundance around the Douglas firs that are loaded with cones. Of course, the cones have seeds in them that the crossbills eat. And during those years when there's a big cone crop, the crossbills go to wherever the good cone crop is, and you see them in abundance. And some of the years, the Doug firs don't really produce very many cones, and you can't hardly find a crossbill. So it's a species that doesn't have a regular migration, but it's more nomadic.
Now, are pine siskins the same way? I've heard more pine siskins this year than I have ever heard in 30 years of being here.
Yeah, it seems like they also have that habit of flying in flocks and congregating where there's a good food supply. Like red alder, for example, is one of the things that they eat. There's a cone-like structure that contains the seeds in red alders, and when those open up and the seeds are available, then the siskins will land there and feed extensively on those, and as well as other tree seeds. So following the food is their strategy as well.
Yeah, we could sit and talk here all day. We've kind of strayed from water birds. For those of you that want to learn more about the amazing world of water bird migration, Jeff and his colleagues, Audrey Benedict and Robert Butler, have recently published a beautiful book on this topic called Pacific Flyway, complete with gorgeous photos. I've really been enjoying my copy. And where can people find a copy of that book, Jeff?
Well, I'd encourage people to order it if it's not on the shelf from your local bookstore.
The imprint, the Writer's Workshop, an imprint bookstore.
Any bookshop will order something for you. Even if they don't have it on their shelf, it's sold out or whatever, they'd be ever so happy to order it, and that'd make me ever so happy if you ordered it.
Well, and we're ever so happy that you put the book together and that you've come out with us today. So thanks so much for sharing with us, and we will look forward to next time. Topics never end, things that we could explore out here.
That's for sure, and it was a beautiful day, and we had an abundance of bird life to look at.
Yes, so. Indeed. And we'll hope for a closer view of the greater yellowlegs next time.
Yeah, probably if you come here this afternoon.
That's right.
Right where we're standing.
I know. Thanks so much.
That spot right there.
And here's our mystery sound again. It's a black turnstone. We saw a bunch of these handsome shorebirds in part one of our show, moving along the rocky shore which parallels the Larry Scott Trail. They are compact, short-billed birds, and in all plumages are mostly black with white bellies. In flight, they are especially dramatic, flashing a striking black and white pattern. A coastal species at all times of the year, black turnstones nest in the wet tundra of coastal Alaska, often near estuaries or lagoons. They migrate and winter along the rocky shorelines of the Pacific coast and started arriving in our area at the end of the summer and will stay with us through the early spring. They are called turnstones because of their feeding pattern of turning over rocks and shells to feed on the invertebrates living under them, and also that of using their strong bills to pry off limpets and barnacles from the rocks. But Jeff mentioned on our field trip that he thinks of them as headbutters instead, because of their habit of ramming their head against clumps of seaweed on the beach to forage on the creatures hiding underneath. This image really captured my imagination. And what did I see a couple of days later on a beach walk but my own group of black turnstones busily working the beach, doing just as he described, using their heads like mini bulldozers, moving big clumps of seaweed around so that they could feed underneath it. So next time you stroll along the shore, keep your eyes peeled for these industrious workers, looking like waiters in their formal black and white plumage. And that's it for KPTZ's Nature Now for the second week of November. Thanks very much to Jeff for sharing his wealth of information with us, and to Nora for doing the field recording and sound editing, and to all of you for listening. If you would like to hear part one of this program, please go to KPTZ and search for the Nature Now podcasts. Part one will be show number 484. This program will be rebroadcast at 5:30 p.m. on Thursday, 12:30 on Saturday, and available as a podcast in a week or so at kptz.org. Closing music this week has a video component that is just as lovely as the music. It is a piece commissioned by the Nature Conservancy called Dance of the Shorebirds. It was filmed right across the water in the Skagit Valley of Washington to showcase one of their Farming for Wildlife project areas, where farmers flooded their fields to create more habitat for migrating shorebirds. The video shows amazing coordinated flights of thousands of shorebirds put to this beautiful music. Go to YouTube and check it out. As always, happy trails.